Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. I'm Abby White. Today we have with us Owen Steer, who is Regional Account Manager at LinkedIn. And we talk to Owen about all things high-performance sales, what he's seen working, what's not working, what's best practice around prospecting, tap in around some of how LinkedIn can help us with that, and so on. And Owen comes from a really, really fantastic enterprise sales background, having come from HPE prior to LinkedIn. Now, before we get stuck into today's conversation, I also wanted to let you know that Owen is one of our RevUp experts. We are so unbelievably lucky to have Owen as a RevUp expert, and our audience and our members have absolutely loved Owen's sessions around how you can use LinkedIn for social selling and what are the do's and don'ts to get started. And Owen does a really fun and interactive session that is very well received. So if you want to check that out, there's links in the show notes if you want to be part of our RevUp community. And Owen will be with us in February for his next masterclass. So without further ado, welcome Owen. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. We have Owen Steer with us today. Welcome, Owen.
Hi, Abby. How are you?
Good. So Owen's getting a medal because this is take two of recording because my son ran in, and we're going to be, he's also been an expert on paper airplanes from my son and been humoring him. So Owen, you're getting a medal from me this morning.
No, thank you. Looking forward to hopefully flying on a plane designed by your son at some stage, as long as it's metal and not paper.
Yeah, so everyone got more than they bargained for this morning. Cool. Well, I'm going to jump straight into it and get cracking. I really, really, really was excited to have you on the podcast for a number of reasons. First one, I love some of the latest research I've seen coming out of LinkedIn. And I personally feel we're in a bit of a state of change with sales, starting to be changes in buyers, changes in other aspects to sort of the landscape. And I think LinkedIn does such awesome research that I'm forever using in my day job. And I wanted to sort of really get your viewpoint on that in terms of what are you seeing, what are you hearing from your latest lens?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for anyone that's genuinely interested in this like yourself, we have our Future of Sales report that goes out quite frequently. So we work with quite a few other partners and customers as well to get a lot of market data. But I think just some of the key snapshots from there is that, you know, we're actually seeing some buyer types change and some role types change as well. So for instance, we're seeing around a 70 to 75% increase in chief revenue titles across the LinkedIn platform. So, you know, not only are you selling to, you know, heads of sales, heads of marketing, whatever business line that you're through, there's now another stakeholder involved, and they're strictly aligned to that revenue side. And I guess my personal experience is that we're seeing them tied towards sales, sales growth, sales operations, and the whole periphery that surrounds, you know, the deal. We're also then seeing a lot of feedback in the surveys that we've run of a lot of our buyer types saying, you know, they actually don't think that the general seller understands them or their business well enough to actually be helpful, which is quite a hard thing to hear. But, you know, if you think about it, you know, how often are you actually researching, you know, your client, you know, right down to the minute detail to actually have something relevant to talk to them about, let alone, you know, their business and organization as well. So for anyone interested, really worth jumping in and seeing what we're discussing in that Future of Sales and how it's aligning to your business and the people within there as well. The two other call outs that I wanted to make, quite fortunate that we're a first party website and platform, and I guess, you know, the closest competitor is miles off in terms of, you know, the data quantity and quality that we have. And we're actually seeing a large shift at the moment in terms of job changes. So for people on our platform, how you actually engage with people and sell through LinkedIn, we're seeing that in January, for people in those senior roles within your client bases, there's a 55% chance that they're more likely to change job than any other month, and that's within Australia. So if you're looking for a new stakeholder, start prospecting through January, because there's going to be some new people within your client base.
And I think I read in one of the LinkedIn studies, and I hope I'm not making this up, that when someone has changed job within that first 90 days, they're more likely to accept a LinkedIn message and an outreach.
Yeah, far more likely. And, you know, it's kind of twofold on that way. So for that individual, you know, we've all got an ego, right? You know, when someone talks to me about something that's relevant to me, I'm way more engaged, way more excited to help out or to understand more about that conversation. And I think if you look at it from a strategic perspective, that person's been hired into role to do a task. Right. And so if you can understand what is that task that they've been hired in to do, it really helps you shape your conversation with them and partnership with them moving forward. So, you know, if you have a new sales manager that's come in to your organization, you can bet they're going to be tasked with doing something around growing that sales team. And they're going to come in ambitious right at the start and try and leave a mark. So, you know, what is it that you can do to understand, you know, what is that person's, you know, new change since they've come into that role?
Yeah, totally agree. I was talking to a former client the other day. We caught up for a coffee and he was saying that he's now coaching. He's in an IT space, former CIO. And he was saying he's actually coaching a lot of IT teams how to get their business case over the line because they can't, because they're focusing too much on the nitty gritty and not the outcome. So it's kind of what you're saying, you know, what have you been tasked to achieve? What's the goal? And then how are we almost selling the outcome? And then the rest is almost like semantics, but understanding that outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, interestingly to that, at the back end of last year, we were working with one of our clients to grow significantly to capture some available market share. And that was one of the first times that I'd actually worked with the client to help on their business case as well. And I think for me, it was a really good understanding in terms of, you know, what happens after I've left the room because, you know, obviously, the decision process, you know, happens at various different stages. And for me, it was a really good understanding to know what I can do to help equip you know, my clients and partners so that when they're going deeper into that process to try and sell things internally, you know, what do they need to see and what's more relevant to them? And I can tell you it's not the fancy graphics that I put into my PowerPoints or transitions, but it you know, it's the data, it's the ROI. It's the expected outcome. So yeah, interesting you bring that up. That was a big learning I had at the back end of last year.
Yeah, and look, one great thing for me is I've actually spent quite a bit of time with you. We've, you know, brainstormed quite a bit. And I have so much respect for you as a seller, and I wholeheartedly mean that. You know, I spend so much time every day with salespeople, and it's amazing. You know, I've talked to you about your accounts. You know, you just see that coming through in you. So I'm really curious around what you're doing in terms of what's working for you right now. You've touched on a few bits. Is there anything else that you feel as a seller yourself you're really seeing working?
Yeah, it's a great question. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. I have to make sure my boss hears that part so he stays happy with me. But I think, and you know, to what we talked about earlier this morning, right at the start of the podcast, is that everyone's just a human at the end of the day. And we've all got things going on outside of work. But I think that what helps me to understand is that trying to push a sale onto someone when they don't want it or don't need it, you know, even if they do purchase something, it's not going to help me in the long term with that client base. I mean, particularly for my set, you know, we've got longstanding partnerships within my account base. So trying to be, you know, as timely, personable, and actually, you know, respecting those businesses is something that I've found really useful at the moment. So, you know, it's no surprise at the moment, budgets are tight, people are pretty hesitant to spend money, people are even hesitant to take meetings because, you know, they've got a million other things that they're trying to do at the moment. So what I've tried to be doing from my side as a seller is, you know, rather than focusing wide, what are the accounts that I have that are publicly in a positive space, and then what is it that I can do to actually, you know, help within that strategic goal of theirs? So, you know, am I talking to them about something that actually matters at a time that matters to them and with the people that care about it? It's something that, that we've all had to shift to. And I've been, you know, shameless plug, I've been obviously using Navigator for that, but I found it extremely helpful. And since doing that, the conversations have been much stronger and much more around partnership and mutual growth rather than, I think you need this right now. Yeah. And that's where confidence in saying that to the client ends, rather than having any data and value to back it up with.
That actually takes me quite nicely to, LinkedIn have just released, as part of Sales Navigator, Account IQ and Relationship Map, which I'm absolutely loving. And I think it speaks to what you were just saying there around utilizing those tools to be able to have more of a business conversation, understand their objectives, understand where they're going. Before actually I dive into that question any deeper, for anyone who's not across what Account IQ is, can you give us the high level summary?
Yeah, of course. So we'll start Account IQ. Effectively, any account planning or territory planning, you would have had to have done a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, job changes, job news, to show that you know your account inside out. And instead of spending hours on doing that, imagine you can do that in about 10 seconds by clicking generate report on LinkedIn Sales Navigator. And what we're effectively doing is using the power of the Microsoft AI platform to provide to you a SWOT analysis on your key accounts. So you're getting information around market trends, their headcount trends, strengths that they have, weaknesses that they're having. So for example, if a company is reducing headcount, that is in the report that you'll be able to see in terms of why they're facing that headcount reduction. Are they growing? What are their profits like? Have they been mentioned positively in the news, etc.? It's everything you need to know before you go to that meeting to sound like you know a lot more about the client than you actually do. So I like to use it a lot if I'm talking to a new stakeholder within a company. I can go through that report, start to understand a lot about what's the latest and greatest coming out of that company, as well as then understanding, is the company growing? Are they reducing? Who matters within there as well? And is there something within that publicly available information that I can leverage in the conversation to drive it in a direction that I want it to go?
Yeah. What I'm loving, I actually was talking about it yesterday at a sales enablement that I did, and the team knew they needed to research and personalize before they reached out. They already were sort of well across the fact that those that are exceeding quota personalize and research every single time, and they actually reach out less than underperformers, and that's a LinkedIn stat. But see, I've been reading your reports. This is how
you're into it.
I sit and read LinkedIn reports. I have no
that and paper airplanes. Yeah.
That and paper airplanes. Yeah. So they knew that and they understood it, but the challenge was, that's great, but I just don't have time. Like, my day job is so demanding. I'm getting smashed. That's utopia. And so I showed them some screenshots of some of their key clients with Account IQ, and they were just like, oh my God. And that's what I'm liking, is at the moment I feel when I'm doing sales enablement teams, I almost used to feel a bit uncomfortable talking about some of the research because I know how hard it is to do that. And I think I'm pretty efficient at it, but it's still hard and time consuming. And I think Account IQ is an amazing way to be able to go, right, I can do that personalization that's being demanded of us. But within a few seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's invaluable from that end. And one of the things that I've found quite interesting as well is that, Navigator is often seen as a sales tool, and specifically as a prospecting tool. Often one of the biggest, hurdles that I come across is people saying, our account managers don't need it because they know everything about the client. So I've never met an account manager that knows everything about their client. There's some people within our organization that I think are extremely good operators, but they can only know so much, and they certainly don't know the news before it comes out. So having that real-time data that comes through and alerts and information they can draw on from Account IQ is invaluable to them. So, you know, if you're dealing with the big banks, anywhere from the big banks right down to the smallest company, you need to know what's happening within that organization. And showing this to our client pool, one of the things that I've heard more than twice is, oh, this team would love this. Our content team would love this, because instead of them having to go and do the research on these accounts as well, you know, non-traditional people that are using Navigator are getting value out of understanding the, the total market that their sales teams and marketing teams are pursuing, for them to be able to, guide directions with, you know, social media content as well.
Yeah. And back to your previous point on existing clients, I actually talked about this one yesterday because the enablement I was doing, the client has got like a few real big, beefy corporates. And I was actually saying, if anything, I think my personal opinion is it's almost more dangerous with existing clients because you go native and you think you know, and so you don't research before you go in. And I remember with one of the banks actually in a previous role, as I was on my way to the client, looking on my phone and just sort of Googling if they've been in the news, and they had just released some interim reports the previous day. And it's that kind of thing that actually it's almost dangerous to think you've gone native.
Absolutely. And you know, to that point as well, if they are a big client, they expect you to know everything that's happening within that organization. And you know, very quickly you can be, you know, outshone by someone that comes in with information and relevant, rather than, you know, the same person time and time again. So yeah, using this and the data to stay front of mind and as though, you know, you are client obsessed. It just is all about building that trust.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you the question I get asked that I get annoyed at. So I thought it'd be fun to ask you it.
I'm excited to hear it.
Do you think there's anything that's not working? I feel like in our industry, and I don't know whether you feel this, but I feel in our industry, we always get like, cold call's not working anymore, or so-and-so's not working anymore. Or, you know, is there anything that you feel from your lens it's not working or you're trying to stay away from?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a hard question to answer because even just within my 32 clients I look after, they're all completely different industries, completely different personalities. They're facing different market conditions. Some are growing, some are reducing headcount. So I would say blanket, there's no thing that's not working. But the things that I've found personally that's not working for me is just trying to make something happen where there's not. And you know, that's really that really shines through by people just strictly not taking back my responses. So, you know, even clients where a year ago, you know, we'd implemented, you know, strategic plans, lots of training, lots of engagement, some really strong usage on our platform, trying to artificially create something new, I don't think is working. It's not certainly not working for me, and I can't imagine it's working anywhere else. And that's because, you know, like what we talked about before is that, you know, it's so clear that, you know, the market's tight, budgets are tight, people are stressed. At the moment, a lot of people are wearing quite a few different hats. There's a lot of organizational changes as well. So, you know, I think that if someone's not ready to be talked to, it's not worth harming the relationship to artificially create something. So if I flip that on its head, what we talked about earlier in terms of what is working, it's been relevant. It's talking to people at the right time in a way that they want to be engaged with as well. It's probably as simple as that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think there's a place for everything. Like there's one client I worked with and they had someone in their team who was a really strong caller. And it's like, whoa, and was cutting through to like the big banks and really senior roles. And it was like, I've got no idea how you're doing this, but it was really, really cutting through. And I think that there's like a place, depending on your industry, depending on your role, that I think there's a place for everything.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to talk about prospecting a little bit, because something that I'm seeing as a theme is certain industries, particularly where it might be, to your point, you know, a little bit more challenging, a little bit of a tougher market. People are having to really double down on prospecting. We can't, you know, we can't just hope that it's going to come in. We've got to really go out there. And for some industries that we're working with, we're noticing that either if people are new to the role, they haven't prospected before, so they've not really developed that skill, or they've not done it for quite a few years and there's a level of getting back on the horse. So is there anything that you're seeing around prospecting that, you know, you'd encourage people to consider?
Very timely that you bring this up. There's a lot of, I guess, change that we're seeing from the prospecting front, and a lot of that is, you know, I'm seeing within my professional services client base as well. So if you talk about traditionally non-sales companies, you look at the big four, and you know, they're all about trying to sell at the moment. You know, they certainly won't use the word selling, but what they're doing is trying to increase revenue within new and existing clients. So that to me is just another way for saying, you know, selling. And I think what we're finding really interesting is that the way that they're going down the sales and prospecting path is completely different to some of the major tech vendors that you and I would both know and have probably worked at ourselves as well. But I think that the thing that's working well for companies that are new to prospecting is actually being strategic about it. So if you think about the our space within IT, right? So, you know, you're ex-IBM, I'm HPE, and I think between us, we'd probably know the majority of ex-IBMers and ex-HPEers around Sydney in Australia. So I know that every time I prospect into a new client and I see an ex-HPE person, it fills me with a lot of confidence that I'll have a relatively easy path in to have a relevant conversation with someone in that organization. And I'm seeing that not only the technology companies doing that, which they've been leveraging our platform for years to do that, but the professional services clients are using that as well, but they're leveraging the value of their partners, their managing partners and directors who have come up for years and years and years, and, you know, often decades, to be really trusted and have clients that they've, you know, had for years and years. And so now, you know, the consultants and the managers and the BD people within these professional services clients are getting very good at leveraging the value of the network of their partners. And so it's just a really interesting insight, I think, in terms of, you know, a non-common sales organization, you know, prospecting and driving business through new ways to leverage our platform and you know, any platform through things like warm leads and shared connection paths into these big accounts.
So there was a really good example of that, of when LinkedIn a couple months ago had like a Future of Sales Summit that we were both at. Yeah. And one of your team, and I really hope you know the example I'm about to talk about, that one of your team gave an example of the LinkedIn team all like doing reach outs and going like, who's connected to who and who can I intro you? Do you know where I'm going with this?
I do.
Can you share the story?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So another plug to Alana Britton, who'd come up with the idea of sprints. So effectively the team would sit in a room, and I'm actually not directly in that team, but from how I understand those sessions to have run is that the team would sit in the room, and for an example, they would focus on one of the team's account list for that half hour, that hour. And within that session, the whole room would be focused on that person's specific account set. They would, on LinkedIn Navigator, download that account list, send it across to everyone in the team. Then the whole team would be able to use their shared connections, their warm paths in, or you know, relevant conversations that they could start within this client base to generate meetings, which then, you know, obviously lead to revenue or just relationship building within these account sets. So, you know, rather than sitting around a room with Excel up on the table and does anyone know this person? Does anyone know this person? It was straight away, you know, right then sitting in the room, you had the account list of that person, you had all the relevant data on those leads and the people within those accounts. And from, a perspective of 8 or 10 different people looking at the same account set, the breadth that you can get in terms of different ways into those accounts is extraordinary. And you know, on a smaller perspective, we use that all the time here at LinkedIn. Most of our ways into clients are through warm introductions. I look at my new client set or a new account that comes in, and I try and look for all the relevant people that I'd need to be connecting with, and the periphery around that as well, which we call them hidden allies, because we've found from the Gartner research it takes around 11 people, stakeholders within a client base to be very secure within a deal. So how can I actually engage with these people? And oftentimes I'm sending messages to Alana, hey, can you introduce me to, so-and-so within this organization, or someone like Matt Tyndale, who heads up LinkedIn here in Australia. Hey mate, do you mind introducing me to so-and-so at this company as well? So you're getting a lot of, leverage out of, people that you work with and people that you know to have these warm introductions in. So that's effectively, the sprint is a mass scale of that in a really condensed time. And I know that team's seen some extraordinary results on that, but big kudos to Alana who set those up.
She is awesome. Definitely an Alana fan here. And I think what's really cool about that is I often do feel like I've done it in another organization. I feel like the CEO of the one I'm thinking of had amazing connections, and the sales team were kind of like bashing their head against a brick wall trying to get in the door. And actually the CEO was sitting there with all the connections. And as soon as we asked the CEO, hey, can we leverage? And can we actually did it via LinkedIn. She was like, yeah, of course. But the sales team had to almost have the initiative to go, hang on, which of these accounts do we think she's got a connection, or we can see on LinkedIn that she's got a connection into, and then actually let's go and have this as a strategy. And I've done it even in sales kickoffs. And as soon as everyone starts talking, they're like, oh, my brother-in-law works there. Yeah. And and there's so much power in the room. And I almost feel like sometimes we make sales really hard and we're trying to do the hard yards and the cold stuff when there's warm right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, doubling down on that, it's that if you think about it, right, every person in a company is effectively in sales. Even if they don't think they're in sales, they're in sales. They're driving the quality of the brand forward. They're driving relationships forward as well. So, if anyone's got a vested interest in sharing their network and making introductions that lead towards things like revenue growth, it's the CEO and it's the C-suite and the executive, committee. So leverage those connections. It's invaluable to have that.
And I think on that note, that was something I learned quite early in my career. I think IBM were quite good at that, of it's not a weakness to go to an exec and say, hey, actually, can you help me in this, get into this account? Or can you come along and get that exec, peer-to-peer relationship? It's actually a strength to be able to ask and build those relationships and get better stakeholder coverage, or get an open door if they've got a connection or they've got a title that helps you open the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I leverage that all the time. I know where I started at HPE, I had two really strong sales leaders there that were so good at joining me in my early days to have some of these meetings with people I would have had no chance to meet with. And I found them extremely valuable and a good learning for me to think, well, they're not scary senior people, right? They're trying to help me do my job because my job effectively helps them do theirs. And so what kind of shared goals do we have? And they were so good at bringing me into the room, booking meetings with some of these senior people that I'd spent a long time trying to figure out a way to talk to them. And even here in LinkedIn, like I said, my boss, he's based in Singapore. And just the value of the connections that he's had from his time here in Australia as well. He sends a message and I'm having coffee with someone from our client book, and it's invaluable to have that I guess shared respect of both pursuing the same major goal.
Yeah. And I think a final point on that, and then I definitely want to ask you a few other pieces around using LinkedIn, is I've been really surprised at seeing, you mentioned before about the Gartner research of saying there's an average of 11 stakeholders. Yeah. But I think LinkedIn yourselves, you're looking at 6+ stakeholder relationships. Otherwise, you're considering a deal could be high risk. So I think in terms of, back to some of our previous points, what's changed or what can you do in prospecting? I think it's that greater stakeholder coverage too.
Yeah, completely agree. And you know, I've found myself at times quite funny where I'm going through training and enablement for some of the clients, and I'm talking about how, you know, you need at least 6 people, 7 people moving forward. And I look in the room, I think, well, I've got 2. So I then go out quite broad after that and build that back through. But you know, it's so important to have that. And one of the things that, again, here's another plug for LinkedIn Navigator, but we've brought out the relationship map. So rather than sitting on PowerPoint and putting people's names in a hierarchy chart, you can do that on Navigator now as well. And what we've been doing within our specific team within global accounts is looking at what's the global hierarchy of this organization, what's the APAC hierarchy, and then what's my Australia, New Zealand hierarchy within here. And very quickly, I can see, well, I know 3 people in here quite well. I've been in email threads with a few of these people, but I'm starting to then list, you know, are they strong relationship, weak, no relationship, who's got the relationships? And quickly it helps me think, well, there's about 5 or 6 different people here I need to go and engage with. And I'm actually going through there quite strategically to build up and bolster our strength within these accounts. So it's a really, really good point you bring up. And I think that something that our platform's trying to adopt as well, and it has since with the relationship map update and release, that it helps you visualize where's your risk and how can you minimize that risk that's forthcoming.
And what I didn't realize about relationship map until quite recently, obviously it's a really recent release, is it also, like, it can notify you, like, if someone's leaving and moving on, or if they've been in the news and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, oh, that's gold. It's not just, you know, mapping out a load of people on a piece of paper where we might go, well, we've got that in a PowerPoint. It's actually got the benefit of, like, alerting and notifying you. So it's like, that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that whole thing again, you know, as a seller, the less time you spend selling, the better. And it's that point you brought up before, Abby, is, you know, people that are actually reaching out less are having better success. And the reason why that success is much higher is because they're more researched and they're more timely and more efficient. So, you know, just a recent example from my end is I've had a new account come into my book as of July, but there was no relevant way for me to go and engage with that client. And I wasn't in a rush. And having tracking 5 or 6 of the different executive committee on that relationship map, I'd been notified that the lead of people and culture across APAC had been mentioned in the news as one of the top 100 HR people in Australia to know. So, you know, saw that in the news. I was alerted on that map, started a conversation with this person on InMail. And we're meeting next week or the week after. So it's a really just natural way, having people in those account maps, to then focus your prospecting in those stakeholders that seem to matter to you and your pursuit.
So I've got to ask you on that, on a slight change of tact. You mentioned there around sending an email, InMail. I get a lot of questions around this of, do InMails actually work? Oh, I get them all the time and I don't read them. What makes a good InMail? What's your answer to that?
Yeah, it comes back to, I guess, the core pillars that we've talked about the whole time is it relevant? Do they care? And why are you sending it? We always have, and I like to try and teach people kind of 3 key things is, why am I messaging you? And what is the relationship behind that message? What is it that I want from this message? And then when? So every message I'll have is, you know, are you free on Thursday? Are you free next week on Tuesday? It starts to solicit a response from people, but my InMails that go out will be related to something that matters to that person. You know, I've had success with some of the CEOs at the Big 4, some of the global banks as well, the managing directors there, by talking to things that seem relevant to them. For example, one of the global banks, they've got an office here in Sydney, and their local CEO is all about sustainability, loves sustainability, is really pushing the sustainability agenda, and is doing a great job of it as well. And someone in such a senior position, it's really positive that they're coming with that strong stance. So I became a lover of sustainability as well. and found some LinkedIn data that supports changes in sustainability roles. So if you've ever heard Grace Kerrison speak, our LinkedIn head of APAC, also a very big advocate of sustainability and has a great sustainability narrative. So I shared some of that data with this global bank leader, and you know, a response that later that afternoon that was relevant to them as well. Where I haven't seen the success is if I've got 10 minutes left in the day and I don't want to miss the bus home, so I send 5 really quick messages out and it's, hey, I'm your account director and you know, we should meet. I never get a response on that. But when I put a little bit more time and effort into that, I get a much better strike rate. I'm not saying I get anything around, you know, 70% response rate, but you know, when I do put the time and effort in, it's a much stronger response. Do you find that from your end as well, Abby?
I feel it's the same theme, right? A rubbish cold call, a rubbish email, a rubbish LinkedIn message that is just generic, not personalized, all about, the biggest mistake I see is it's all about the company. So like, we've been in business for 25 years and we're awesome and this is what we do. And it's not about the prospect, what they might be facing, what some of their challenges might be. You know, it's not relevant to them. It's just like, it's a pitch. And so I think for me, I think LinkedIn's no different. You've got to have that personalized, that research, everything we keep talking about. Otherwise, it's not going to work. It doesn't matter what the platform is. It could be a fax, if anyone still has a fax. it just has to, it cannot be spam, is basically the punchline.
Yeah, completely agree. And I mean, even from my end, I get these messages on LinkedIn. I've had someone on LinkedIn message me and try to sell me like prospect list. I thought, mate, you could have done 2 minutes of research and would have known that I'm the complete antithesis of that idea. And I've actually got that first party data here anyway. So again, it's just, there's no way they're getting a response and there's no way that conversation is going anywhere from there. But that research element really, really goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think something that I really want to talk to you about is what I've noticed is there's a lot of people in my network who will very happily present to a CEO, super confident, super experienced. Ask them to do a LinkedIn post and it's like, oh. And I believe, and I don't know whether I'm right in this, this is just my lens, that there is a challenge with sales teams using LinkedIn for 2 reasons. One is I'm putting myself out there. I don't want to come across like an ass and that I'm full of myself. Or the second one is actually I just don't have time, and also building and getting into the habit and getting onto the horse. So if I break those into 2 and start with the like putting yourself out there and feeling uncomfortable, how do you encourage people to get over that? How do you get over that? How do you do it?
Yeah, and I'm by no means the best person for this. I'm not a once a week poster. I'm maybe once a month, and you know that's what I'm comfortable with, and I think that's what my network is comfortable with seeing from me. So I like to stick to that cadence. I guess the way that I got over is actually through your masterclass session, which I think was with Maz. Where they talked about the personal brand. And the thing that I found really interesting and I've started to adopt it in my posts is, you know, what matters to you and what do you really care about? And then what matters to your audience? And where does that intersection lock? So for me, hey, Jaden, how are you? So for me, the intersection that I love is around sport. I love sports. And so things that are related to sports, a lot of my things will have you know, races that I've done or activities that I've done around charity work as well through blood donations, and then tying that into data with something else to do with LinkedIn. That's where I feel comfortable with my posts. I think in Australia we're quite unfortunate with that tall poppy syndrome. No one likes to put themselves out there too far. But I think that, you know, if you want to try and overcome that, it's quite simple to look at in terms of what do you actually care about and what can you speak genuinely about, and what is it that people would expect to hear from you about? You know, no one's going to throw cheeky comments about, you know, something that you genuinely care about and that they know that you care about as well. So be honest, be open, and just be forthcoming with things that you think are relevant to people, you know, you care about, and you know, whether they're prospects or just, you know, friends on the platform as well. The other part around that from the sales teams is an interesting question. And I like to just try and, I guess, discuss the same process there as well. One of the things that I'm really excited about is that, you know, obviously LinkedIn and Microsoft are strongly partnered, and we've got a really strong AI platform that's come into our LinkedIn, LinkedIn.com, as well as all of our other, you know, LinkedIn, you know, marketing, talent, learning, and sales solutions as well. And so one of the things that I've found is that in my posts, I can put 5 dot points around things that I want to discuss or things that I think are relevant, and AI can write the rest. So if you see on my page, there's actually posts that I had written for me by the LinkedIn AI. And I thought it was great. I didn't know how to word it. I didn't know how to make it interesting and cool and relevant to the market. So I just asked AI to do it. So if anyone's got a premium LinkedIn, you know, you'll be able to have that post written for you in no time.
Thank you. I am conscious that I have to let you go because you have to run to a meeting, but I'm also going to give Owen an award because whilst he was answering that question, I was on mute with my little one running in and hijacking our podcast, and Owen managed to keep going and answer the question. So hats off to you, not only for your knowledge around sales, your knowledge in helping us around the industry and how it's evolving, but also your industry, your ability to do a podcast with distractions of small children. I am hats off to you today.
No, it's good. It keeps it exciting. But yeah, Abby, wanted to thank you as well for having me on the platform. And, you know, thanks to the audience as well for listening. But, you know, just to leave on 2 points is that, you know, if you have any questions on anything to do with LinkedIn, don't hesitate to reach out to me or anyone else that you know of that works at LinkedIn. You know, it's a very powerful platform. There's 1 billion people on there now. There's 14 million people in Australia on there. So, you know, think about how you can use it within your own industry. You know, we're agnostic across industries. And the other thing is that, you know, if you're prospecting, if you're in business development, if you're in, you know, enterprise sales, mid-market sales, global accounts, it doesn't matter. Just be relevant. Have a purpose behind why you're reaching out to people, and you're going to have, you know, much, much better success moving forward. And it's not only about the sale, right? It's about the relationship you build with people to move that, you know, that partnership into a stronger place for yourself and for the client too.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, hats off, LinkedIn, I think, are really fantastic at building relationships. You know, I was in Singapore and your team were like, come have lunch, meet us, come look around the office, we'll show you around, we'll do a tour. Like, I felt like long lost family. Even how you've partnered with me, you know, you're always happy to catch up, you're always checking in, you're always, you know, seeing what's going on. You guys are truly fantastic example of partnering. So thank you.
No, really, really appreciate it. And yeah, for anyone else that wants to come and tour a LinkedIn office, they're pretty cool. They're very like techie and new age. So yeah, if you ever want to come, grab, you know, LinkedIn caters breakfast and caters lunch and, you know, some awesome perks in here. So, you know, if you're ever interested to see the team behind the platform, don't hesitate to reach out, and we're happy to take you through the offices.
Amazing. Thank you, Owen. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Nice. Thanks, Abby.
Thanks for joining us on today's conversation. As I mentioned at the start, Owen is one of our RevUp experts, and he's going to be with us on the 14th of February to run a members-only RevUp masterclass. If you want to find out all the details, go to the link in the show notes and you can find out everything you need to know there.